This Is Your Life, Season 2, Episode 9. Welcome to This Is Your Life with Michael Hyatt, where our goal is to give you the clarity, courage, and commitment you need to do what matters. My name's Michelle Cashatt. I'm your co-host, and I'm sitting in the studio today with Michael Hyatt. Hey there, Michael.
Hey, Michelle.
About 6 months, I don't know, maybe 8 months ago, you wrote a post and you said the following. Charisma may be useful in attracting a following, but it is largely useless when it comes to achieving long-term positive impact on the people and organizations we lead. For this, we need character. Effective leadership is an inside-out job. That's a pretty amazing quote, Michael. I love that.
Well, it really comes from my years of helping people build platforms and realizing that oftentimes their public image is one thing and their private conduct or their personal character is something else entirely. And when that gap gets too big, you're really headed for a collision. And obviously, you're going to lose your influence and the impact that you hope to have.
You know, I wonder if you find, I've kind of found this myself, but that people spend far more time and energy developing kind of their external persona. And especially now that we're in the social media culture, so rich with people that are putting information out there for others to see. And they spend so much time developing this kind of external sense of self, that, and they don't really spend as much time working on the internal sense of self or that character development.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's where the problem comes in, because it's easy to keep yourself busy managing your perception or the image that you project to the world. And as you said, I think this is kind of the dark side of social media. You know, it doesn't have to be, but it definitely can be, because we can present to the world the person that we wish we were, sort of, you know, to put it in the best possible light, the aspirational view of ourselves, as opposed to who we really are. And I think the secret to long-term success and lasting impact is to really focus on development of that personal character. That's what's going to carry us through when we inevitably hit setbacks or bumps in the road or suffering or whatever. And it's, you know, it's going to happen to all of us.
Absolutely. So today we're going to be talking about, in just a few moments, we'll talk about the three forces that shape character. But before we dive into that, I think what we really need to do, just so we understand what's at stake, is to identify the fallout if we don't do this. Yeah. I think it would just be so beneficial for all of us to really contemplate if we don't invest the time to shape our character, to go through that kind of hard work of allowing our character to form and become its full potential. What's the fallout if we don't do that?
Well, at the very least, embarrassment.
At the least.
At the least. Because, you know, in the world of social media, the other part of it that's kind of dark is that, you know, it says in the Bible, be sure your sins will find you out. And in social media world, it's true. I mean, we've seen this one person after another, that when they do something in private, often that makes its way into the social media channels. And I remember when I first assumed the helm of the CEO of Thomas Nelson, my predecessor said to me, he said, you should evaluate every decision you make based on how it would look on the front page of the Wall Street Journal.
Oh, wow.
And so in other words, if this decision you're making behind closed doors that nobody's privy to right now, if that ever finds the light of day, is it something you're going to be proud of or something you're going to regret? And so I really tried to conduct myself with that view. And I think the same is true in every aspect of your life. But embarrassment, humiliation, I think the worst thing, though, is the disillusionment it creates in the people that we're trying to lead. You know, when they see a leader who, I mean, first of all of us are guilty of some level of hypocrisy.
Oh, absolutely. You know,
there's a gap between who we want to be and who we really are. And I think that's the truest thing that you could say of anybody, and even the best leaders we know. Probably even if we were to interview Mother Teresa here, she would say, yeah, you know, there was a gap. And we want to close that gap. But still, when people see that gap, and when it's unacknowledged, and when it's too big, they get disillusioned. And we've all seen this in corporate world, in the church world, when we have leaders that aren't walking their talk. And it's just discouraging. You know, you think, gosh, I believed, and I had a pastor when I was in college who had a terrific fall. And public humiliation, yes. I mean, it was all in the newspapers. But to those of us who had followed him and who had given him our trust, it was devastating.
You know, absolutely.
It was the kind of thing where you just want to just give up and just quit and say, what's the use? Everybody's fake. Everybody's false.
Mm-hmm.
Which is not true, by the
which
way.
Which is not true. And we tend to take it to that extreme just because I think the cost or the fallout from that is so steep.
It is.
Mean, it's just so painful. And we get so discouraged when we see that it happens that we, in our own kind of sense of self-preservation, we jump to, well, everybody's fake. So I'm going to kind of pull back. And that's not the solution either.
Well, and also just because others fail doesn't give us a free pass, you know, because we still got to persist. And I think the world is still looking for leaders who walk their talk, you know, even though it's imperfect, even though it's inconsistent. But I know I really respond to that. And I've had the privilege of knowing and loving and following some incredible leaders that, though they weren't perfect, they were honest about that. And they were very quick to come forward with their failings. And that actually boosted my perception of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's true.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's such an interesting paradox where, you know, we can spend all this time and energy and money trying to build a following. And yet if we would just learn how to walk with character and integrity day in, day out, to be who we are in public and as well as our personal life and have that be consistent, that is such a draw. It's like a natural, it's like moths to the light. It's such a draw for others just to be that kind of person.
It's actually the foundation of the platform, you know, to put it kind of in that metaphor. People spend so much attention on platform, and certainly I emphasize that. I help people do that. I run something called Platform University. But still, the foundation of that is character. And we've got to make sure that we're giving attention to that, because then if we have a platform, it just means that the splat is going to be bigger when we fall.
Yes.
And so, and we've all seen, we've witnessed this over the last several months where leaders of very large platforms have taken terrific spills.
Huge spills.
And been humiliated, and it's caused irreparable damage to the people that follow them. And again, there's always fallout. There's always people that want to give up and walk off the field.
Now, here's another question for you. What about the person who has had that fallout? Because I'm sure there's somebody listening that has had a stumble, has had a fall, and they've been that leader that didn't necessarily live consistently, and the truth has been exposed, and they're dealing with that kind of humiliation, maybe on just a small, in a small way versus a large way, or maybe it's in a big way. Is it recoverable?
Absolutely. But it begins by getting really honest and confessing the problem, you know, acknowledging that there's a problem, not trying to cover it. There's a Bible verse, and I can't quote it. It's in Proverbs, but it says, he who covers his sin shall not prosper. And I think we spend a lot of energy trying to cover our mistakes, try to cover our sins, which, by the way, are two different things, but still trying to cover that rather than stepping into the light and acknowledging it. My experience is that people are incredibly forgiving if you're willing to be forthcoming about the problem. The reason political leaders get into trouble, again, church leaders, business leaders, is because they're not forthcoming. They spend an inordinate amount of time trying to cover over the mistake or the sin that they've committed. And then people get vicious.
Oh, true.
You know, people want to prove a point.
We don't have much tolerance for a lack of honesty or a lack of authenticity. We really don't. And so we do tend to get vicious when we have somebody that is refusing to be honest and tell the truth.
Yeah, because you can kind of get the sense that they're spinning it. And I don't know about you, but it's probably true for all of us. I hate spin. I hate spin too.
Maybe it's because we see it so much. We're just really tired of it. Let's just shoot straight. Just give it to me straight.
Yep.
I don't want to hear you try to manipulate or spin things for your own benefit. Let's just be honest.
No, let's just be honest. I mean, I'm happy to forgive you and we'll move on, but don't spin it. You know, I have this theory, and it's this, that it's never the sin that you commit or the mistake that you make that ultimately gets you into serious trouble. It's your unwillingness to deal with it. That's what gets people in trouble.
That's good stuff right there. And you're right. And it's really not, like you have said, and we've talked about this before. I mean, generally speaking, we're all fairly forgiving because we're all mistake makers.
Yeah.
We're all in the same boat where we're trying really hard and we blow it and we don't always kind of end up with the result that we wanted. We don't always act the way that we intend. So we're generally forgiving as long as people are willing to admit it and own it and move on.
Well, Gail and I have a friend. And she went through a terrific divorce, and it was her fault. She got into an affair, but it was her unwillingness to acknowledge that and really confess it to her family that created this huge gap, this huge separation with her children. Her children won't even speak to her anymore. And she's like, you know, why can't they be more forgiving? Why can't they just understand that I'm human? It has nothing to do with that.
Mm-mm.
If she would just acknowledge it, but instead she continues to blame her husband. She continues to blame her circumstances. She refuses to be accountable, to own it, to step into it and just say, you know what I did, regardless of the circumstances, was absolutely wrong. And I'm so sorry for, you know, the grief that this has caused you. But she won't do that. And so she stays stuck.
Uh-huh.
And she's still...
And the relationships are still broken.
That's right.
Still broken. You know, on the converse side, I have a friend who had a similar situation just like that, but responded differently. And to this day, I mean, the affair ended up causing a divorce and a split in the marriage relationship. But from day one, my friend owned it. I mean, it's owned it. My fault. I made a mistake. Feels great remorse and regret over it. And relationships with children are very strong, and with the other family members, very strong, just because, you know, she owned it.
And the only difference was the confession.
That's it.
Willing to own it.
Same mistake, you know, same misstep, and yet the difference in how their lives are playing out now and the relationships are all dependent on character,
yes.
How they displayed character in that circumstance.
Well, and the point that you're making that I think is important is again, nobody expects you to be perfect. And if you failed, even in a profound way, there's redemption for that. There's complete hope for that. So I don't want anybody that's listening to this podcast to just say, okay, well, I've blown it. I've fallen hard, and there's no, you know, there's no redemption for this situation, because there absolutely is. And that's probably another podcast.
Yes.
But character is the foundation. It's got to be something we give attention to, because any of us left to our own devices are going to wander from the path.
Absolutely. Well, that's such a hopeful. I'm so glad you said that, because just me personally, I tend to make big mistakes. So I love knowing that, you know,
too.
There's redemption for all of them. That's so hopeful. All right. So let's talk about the three forces that shape character, because I, for one, this is so important to me, and I really want to learn how to be a person of character and continually develop character. By the way, character isn't something that you just achieve it on a Sunday and it's done, right?
No. Yeah, it certainly isn't. I mean, it's something that takes a lifetime. And even then, after a lifetime of working on it, there's still room for improvement.
So true.
But it's got to be
intentional. It's an ongoing process.
Yes.
And I've also found that if you aren't intentional about developing character, it doesn't stay static. It slips.
That's right.
So you always have to be kind of developing character and making it a priority. Otherwise, it kind of slides. It doesn't stay in one place.
Well, it's kind of why these three forces that we're going to talk about are, in a sense, neutral. Because if you do the opposite of what we're talking about with these forces, they can have a detrimental effect on your character.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we'll talk about both of those.
All right. So let's start with number one, the very first force that shapes character.
Yeah, it's the input that we consume.
The input we consume. And that comes from multiple different sources,
it does.
Correct? Give me some examples.
Well, some examples. You know, geeks are fond of saying garbage in, garbage out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true with our character. So, for example, the books that we read, the television that we watch, the podcasts we listen to, all of that's going to have an impact on our thinking. And ultimately, it's our thinking that shapes our behavior, that shapes the actions that we take that define our character. So, you know, the opposite is also true. If we watch endless hours of television, you know, I mean, you can, if you watch enough news today, I'm just going to, you know, take a swipe at the news industry.
It's okay.
But they
it's
have
been a rough few weeks in the news.
It has, so. But they've got enormous pressure to crank out dramatic news 24/7. Their goal is to keep you glued to their channel. So the more dramatic, the more sensational they can make it, the more likely you're going to stay tuned, right?
True.
So if you watch enough of that, it'll create anxiety in you, if not outright fear.
I can't watch the news before bed anymore because I don't sleep.
I know. And the thing about it is, and we were talking about this with my daughter, Megan, there's never been so much awareness, and yet there's very little we can do about this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can certainly pray for people that are on the other side of the world that are going through these horrific situations. But by and large, it has just a detrimental impact on my character and everything else. And I'm not saying stick your head in the sand, but I'm just saying endless consumption of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just tuned to news 24/7 is not healthy for your character.
Even some of the television shows that we watch and all that, I mean, I have found that it can change my mood so quickly depending on what I'm watching on TV. I'm kind of embarrassed to say that I can watch an hour show and
too.
It can change my mood.
Well, and that's because what we focus on is going to impact our emotional state.
True.
You know, it's one of the things that impacts that. But there's other things too. You know, if you're viewing pornography,
uh-huh.
you know,
Absolutely.
That's going to have a terribly negative impact on your character. And I think that a lot of guys and gals that are involved in that don't realize that. They think it's something
that's... it's neutral and it's not.
It's just neutral. Yeah, it's not going to affect their character.
But it
is going to. At the very least, it objectifies other people mm-hmm. as sexual objects and demeans them mm-hmm. in a very profound way and subtly impacts the way that you look at other people and the way you view other people.
So true. How about books? You know, generally speaking, books are good. I love to read, you know, but there's still, you know, we do have to be careful even there too, what kind of things that we're reading and what we're putting in and how it's changing how we view life and our perspective yeah. and even our opinions of other people.
Well, and that's why, I try to be really intentional with my reading, and I start every morning reading the scriptures. Mm-hmm. And the reason for that is I want something that's timeless and true, something that's weathered the test of time, something that really helps me get a perspective on the world that's that 30,000-foot view that comes from a position of how reality is, so that I can use that as a filter for evaluating everything else in my life. But I also want to read other books that are really good. Mm-hmm. And you know, occasionally I read books that are just, you know, brain candy. Uh-huh. and that's okay, too. But I just think we just got to be conscious of what we're consuming. It's just kind of like, if you think about food, you know, occasionally I eat junk food.
Uh-huh.
But I'm conscious of it, and I don't make a steady diet of it. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's a very interesting point, because as you were talking, I was thinking of the fact that it may be a valuable exercise to actually do a written log of what we're consuming. And as you mentioned, diet, you know, those who want to lose weight typically will keep a diet record, like what they've eaten throughout the day. And it helps them stay on top of what they're consuming because they're writing it down. And so, I mean, wouldn't that be a great exercise?
That would be a great
exercise.
Even
as far as what we're mentally consuming, is just kind of going through a 24-hour period and saying, okay, what kind of input have I put into my mind today?
Yeah, we could call that almost like a content or an information or an input audit, you know?
Yes.
But yeah, to be more deliberate about that and to think, okay, what do I need to be reading? What podcasts could I listen to that are uplifting, that are informational, that are challenging to me? You know, what are the great books that I can read? Mm-hmm. You know, what is it that I can consume that will, in fact, shape my character? This is, by the way, one of the reasons that I love reading history.
Oh, isn't that so true? Oh. Reading biographies and kind of learning from other people's stories is so valuable.
It's so valuable because you see the lessons of life mm-hmm. Demonstrated for you sort of in, you know, 3D and in full color. And I'm reading a book right now called The President's Club. And it's a book about the relationship that the former presidents of the U.S. have had with one another. And I am loving it. There are so many lessons that I'm getting from that. Another one, Team of Rivals, about Abraham Lincoln, uh-huh. another great book.
Oh, the Eric Metaxas, his book on Bonhoeffer, same.
Yeah, fantastic
so powerful.
Book. Yeah, same thing.
Just learning from history and individuals that had a profound impact. And, you know, they weren't perfect either. I think that's what's so helpful
right.
is I see their character in both a good and bad light, and it really helps then make me more intentional about how I'm living.
One of the things I noticed in this the President's Club was how many of the presidents read history and biography.
Mm-hmm.
Because they were looking for the same thing. They
same,
were looking
yeah.
for the inspiration and for the lessons that they could apply to their own lives. And obviously, all of them didn't have great character. But some of them really did.
Oh,
remarkably so,
true. So. All right. So that first force that shapes character is the input that we consume. Now, go ahead. Let's move on to number two, which I had these questions at the back of my mind getting ready to launch into them, but they really fit under the second category, which is so important. So go ahead and tell us. What's the second
okay,
force?
The second force is the relationships we pursue.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. Well, Jim Rohn said this. He said, you're the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Now, if that's true, and I believe it is, then we've got to be more intentional about the people that we surround ourselves with. Now, I can anticipate the question, so hold that question. But if
yes.
you want to lose weight, for example, uh-huh. hang out with people who make good diet and exercise choices.
Absolutely.
I'm not saying you go around evaluating everybody based on, you know.
I'm sorry, I can't hang out with you. You don't exercise.
Yeah,
enough.
Exactly.
We don't do that.
But if you want a better marriage, and Gail and I had the good fortune of this early in our marriage, hang out with people that have great marriages.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you hang out with people that have the same marriages or worse marriages, you become, again, as Jim Rohn said, the average of the five people you spend the most time with. If you want to make more money, associate with people that are successful. So this really applies to any area of life, but it's a great great principle to be intentional about that and not just drift. And this is like the opposite. I talk a lot about this idea of drift, but to just drift into a peer group that you haven't chosen and you wonder why you can't make any progress in your marriage or in your career or your finances or your health. And you just look around. Who are you hanging out with?
Yeah, I've noticed that. And it usually takes me a while to kind of pick up on it, where I find myself, in particular about whether it's, let's talk about marriage right now, because you mentioned that a minute ago, hanging out with a couple friends who are very critical of their spouse. And just having lunch or having coffee and listening to that. And all of a sudden, I see my own thought process start to change based on being in this conversation for too long. And I have to be so careful that I don't end up becoming critical and negative myself, just being in that environment.
Well, it's contagious.
It is.
You know, attitudes are contagious, and that's why we have to be particularly careful with this. And for those of you that are looking for biblical justification for this, it's a great verse in 1 Corinthians 15:33, bad company corrupts good character. So if that's true, and if character is the issue that we're talking about today, why would you surround yourself with bad company? You know, that person you may really like, and there may be a connection, and I can think of friends I've had like this in the past, but they really weren't good for me because their character, there was a defect that was there that I risk catching if I'm not careful.
So wise. And again, we're talking about, as the quote, Jim Rohn's quote, about the five people you spend the most time with. It doesn't mean that we eliminate every single
person that's
negative or whatever. Eventually, we'd have no friends because all of us have our moments of being negative. But we're really trying to focus in on those kind of chief relationships that we spend time with and making sure that we're being intentional about those.
Yes. Well, and I, when I wrote about this originally in a blog post, I had somebody said, "Well, I'm in prison ministry. What are you saying? You know, if I surround myself with these prison, no, we're just saying who you spend the most time with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's people that we may be called to be in relationship with, or called to serve, or called to try to help. It's not what I'm talking about here.
No,
I'm talking
we're not
about the people that are peers.
We're not going to abandon.
That's right.
Every single person that doesn't meet our expectations. Now, let's speak to the person that, let's say, the person who's in a job and they either have a boss or another fellow employee that they have to work with 40 hours a week. They're in cubicles next to each other or whatever. And that person is just probably one of the most negative, difficult people to be around. And yet they don't have a choice. So what kind of advice would you give that person? They go to work every single day and have to spend time with that
person. Well, a couple things I would say, Michelle, is number one, be aware of it. We get into trouble when we're not aware. We're drifting in an environment, and we just become part of the problem instead of being conscious of it. I had this exact situation when I went to work for a corporation 20 years ago, and everybody was very negative about the CEO of this company, and they would gossip about it all the time. Well, that created a real disconnect for me because I thought, it doesn't really sound reasonable that I would take a check from this guy. In other words, he's paying me to do a job, and then behind his back, I'm criticizing him. So I just chose, it's not that I'm that virtuous, I just saw the hypocrisy of it, and I said, I'm not going to do that. I refuse to engage in this behavior. I am not, and by the grace of God, I didn't. I am not going to critique this man behind his back. So I just refused to participate. So when that would start, I would either change the subject intentionally, or I'd walk away from the conversation. I didn't get all self-righteous and I didn't, you know, reprimand them. I just didn't participate because I knew that it was like, it was poison to my soul. And so I think if you're aware of it and if you're intentional and you've probably got more influence than you think to shape that conversation. Because one of the things I started doing in that very situation was I would start pointing out the boss's positive traits, of which he had very many.
Oh, I'm sure, because nobody is 100% evil.
That's exactly.
Or at least I haven't met anyone like that.
That's
really not. Usually I can find at least one or two redeeming qualities and try to focus on them. There's something that can be learned.
Well, and as I've said on this podcast before, you get more of what you notice. It's true with your spouse and why it's important to praise your spouse publicly.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
if you start doing it negatively, guess what? You start noticing even more negative stuff.
Oh, absolutely. It feeds the monster, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Just saying it out loud or, you know, as you were talking about people sitting around complaining about the boss, it took me a while to learn that doesn't change anything. It doesn't really accomplish anything. It's just wasted air. And what it ends up doing, kind of like you said, is it ends up making me more negative, more discontent, more dissatisfied, which is only detriment to me. It doesn't change the boss.
Yep.
And it doesn't
right.
change the environment.
Well, it may be even important to know why people do that. And I've thought about this a lot, but I think it's an easy way to connect.
Oh, and like relationship to like form camaraderie because misery loves company.
Exactly. And it's kind of the function of any kind of complaining. is it creates sort of sympathy or empathy, and it creates a faster emotional connection.
Okay.
But there's other ways to do it besides complaining. And ultimately, you know, that's not a healthy way to do it.
Such good advice. All right. So the first force that shapes character is the input we consume. The second is the relationships we pursue. I've loved our discussion on that, by the way. And then what is that third force that shapes character?
Yeah, the third one is the habits that we acquire. You know, these are simply the consistent ways that we think, speak, and act in different situations. Those are habits. And habits are largely unconscious, and that's what gives them their power, both mm-hmm. positively and negatively. So we've got to be deliberate about the habits that we acquire. And good habits lead to good outcomes. So if we develop the habit, for example, of praising our spouse in public, which we talked about before, that contributes to a healthy marriage.
Okay.
You know, if we consistently cultivate the habit of paying attention to our finances, they'll improve. Mm-hmm. You know, what gets noticed and measured over time improves. So these habits are really important. But the negative habits, we can slip into these habits. I mean, even a simple habit like, you know, sleeping in too much.
Yes.
You know, or being consistently late to meetings, as mm-hmm. I was this morning.
Although we won't mention that. But I was on time. But the funny thing is I'm usually late, so I'm very proud of myself for being on time.
Well, and see, if that happens once in a while, you can forgive
it,
right?
Oh, yeah, it's just life.
You know,
you're
not thinking I'm lame or what we might be,
although
but not for that reason.
I did just say on your podcast to thousands of listeners that Michael Hyatt was late this morning and I was on time. Did I say it a second time? I just did it again.
By 30 minutes, I'm coming clean. But if I do that consistently, you would begin to form an opinion about me.
Yeah.
And so these habits are really important, and they are the expression of our character, ultimately. And one of the great things about being human is that we can choose those habits. We don't just have to be robotic about it and just let external forces shape mm-hmm. us. And Dr. Covey used to talk about putting a space or a pause between the stimulus and the response. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you have the habit of anger, you know, like, and I had a
like
boss
kind
like
of
this.
Being explosive or
yeah,
reactive.
Explosive. You know, you get the stimulus and you just explode. Well, you can learn to take a deep breath and to be more thoughtful about your responses.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that's a habit.
It's a habit, and it's a hard one to learn. It
yep.
takes time. I've thought of that, too. I tend to be a worrier. Do you know anything about that?
I've heard of it. No, I tell you what, that's like my number one thing I struggle with.
It's hard. I tend to go into kind of anxious, anxiety, worry mode. And, you know, it's really a fallacy because we think worry kind of, it makes us feel like we are in control because I can worry the thing to death and that means I'm still in charge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's totally false. You know, it's ridiculous. But that worry can be such a default habit. If something's not going right or something's coming up that I'm anxious about, I can just worry myself sick over that. And I'm learning that I have to kind of stop that process, but
it
takes some steps, but I have to choose a different habit. Rather than jumping
yep.
to worry, I've got to jump to something else. And a lot of times, I have to say some kind of different phrase out loud to change my thought process, and I have to maybe change an activity or something. But it truly is a habit that I can invest in and do differently.
Well, that one particular issue, worry, which I know something about, the thing that I've found, the best habit I've found is gratitude.
Mm.
You know, because mm-hmm. I can almost, like when it starts happening to me, it feels like it's outside of my control, like, oh, here comes that thing again. But, and the way I resist it, the way I fight it is I said, I'm going to be grateful. What can I be grateful for right now?
Right
and
now.
Start listing them off. And it's almost kind of by rote.
Mm-hmm.
But over time, that really does change my worry into something less than worry. I wouldn't
yeah.
say peace. That's probably too strong a statement. But
yeah, it's usually a pretty big leap.
It's manageable.
Absolute panic to peace. But if we could just have less panic, then I feel
that'd
like
be good.
It's a success.
That would be good.
Well, and that's all part of our character development. And, you know, we just got done saying how it's so hard at times. This is not, you know, we're throwing out these suggestions, but we fully validate the fact that these are difficult disciplines. They're not easy. But that's really what character is about. Character
right.
happens in the fire, and that's how it gets refined.
Well, and I think to see that we have control over it, we can be proactive in the development of our character by taking advantage of these three forces is great. Because I think sometimes we think, well, it's just a matter of our upbringing or it's a matter of our education. All those are important. But I've met people, and you've met people, who had a rough start, maybe didn't have the best background.
Mm-hmm.
the best education, whatever, but to become people of supreme character because they were intentional about it. It mattered to them, and it's got to matter to us. We got to place a value on it before we're going to change.
Well, as we said at the very beginning of the episode, and I quote you again, leadership is an inside-out job. It's not just what you portray on the outside. Actually, that comes very much secondary to the work that you're doing on the inside. And even if you've done a fabulous job of creating a kind of spotless external persona, eventually the internal character is revealed. It just is a matter of time for all of us,
yes,
you
exactly.
and me included. And so this idea of developing character is such a critical part of our leadership. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's really what happens behind the scenes that matters more than what happens out in public. It has to happen first, at least. And again, we talked about the three forces that shape character today. The first is the input we consume. The second, the relationships we pursue. And three, the habits we acquire. If you enjoyed today's conversation, you can get all the show notes and a full transcript of the entire episode at michaelhyatt.com. In addition, if you would prefer to watch rather than listen, we have the video of this recording at the same website at michaelhyatt.com. Do you have any final thoughts for us today, Michael?
Yeah, as important as your platform is and public perception and all of that, your character is ultimately the thing that's going to shape your future and your impact and your influence. So you've got to give at least equal weight, if not more weight, to that.
Thank you, Michael. Well, thank you again for being with us today. Until next time, remember, your life is a gift. Do what matters. In the next episode of This Is Your Life, Michael and I are going to talk about the 10 biggest mistakes people make setting goals and how to fix them.
It's very common for people to have goals as it relates to their career.
Okay.
But if you're going to be fully expressed as a human being, if you're going to become all that you were created to be, you've got to set goals in the other areas of your life. Your health, for example,
okay.
Your spiritual life, your marriage, your involvement in the community, and yes, career goals. But all those different slices of the pie have to be addressed if you're going to experience happiness mm-hmm. and meaning as a human being.
That's next time on This Is Your Life.